Hey, good morning. Can we all stand together? No, I'm kidding. I'm just saying that because Louise made you stand up. So, well, good morning. Oh, that was brutal. Good morning. Much better. Thank you. Hey, it's great to be here in Stayner. I travel a lot in the ministry. And from September right through to June, I'm gone all the time. I'll come home for short spurts, and I'm back on the road teaching. And this summer, we said, let's just take it off. Let's not do anything. No camps, no churches, nothing. And I've been home now for 4 weeks, and I was really starting to get a little fidgety and bored because I'm used to always going and flying somewhere and doing something. And when Michael Facebooked me and said, hey, are you in Stayner this weekend? I said, well, I can be. And it just worked out so perfectly. So I'm really, really happy to be here this weekend. And I, too, believe that this is a God thing. And I wish I could have stayed longer, but because of pre-existing engagements, I could only be here today. But I think we're going to have a great time learning together, okay? Now, can I ask, are you guys willing and ready to learn something new this morning? Okay, that's most of you. Okay. I'm just going to start off and give you a basic kind of guideline and rule that I have when I teach. Okay, I don't have many rules. I actually don't have any except this one rule, and it's this. If you learn something new in the service this morning, I just want you to go, wow. Like out loud. Okay, let's practice. One, two, three. Okay. I was in a church, and I was speaking, and the pastor was sitting right here in the front row. And I started to do, you know, the instructions that I give, and I'm teaching. And the pastor was like the loudest guy in the whole church. He was, wow, wow. I mean, it was so encouraging. And I love that feedback. I feed off of the energy of the people in the room and their involvement. And he was just, wow, wow. And then right, like halfway through, he stopped. Not another wow for the last half hour. It was just dead. And I thought, uh-oh. I crossed a line. I said something I shouldn't have. I've been known to do that, just so you know. And see, I told you after I started preaching, not before. Yeah, good. Yeah. And I said to him, I said, listen, what happened during their service? You were like my wow guy. And all of a sudden, you just stopped. And he kind of did one of these. He looked around. And he said, I didn't want the people in my church to think I didn't know anything. So I had to stop it at some point. Said, fair enough, fine, I get it. Well, let me tell you a little bit about myself, because this is my first time here. Many of you may have no knowledge or understanding of what it is that we do. I'm a Portuguese Canadian, live in Milton. How many have heard of Milton, Ontario? Wow! Wow. Okay, I'm from Milton. Woo-hoo. And my parents came to Canada when I was just 2 years old, so I was raised here. Love living here. And for 11 years, I was a full-time pastor. And after 11 years, God delivered me from the pastoral ministry. Because when I first started, it was wonderful. It was the same church every weekend. It was the same people. It was the same songs. And after 11 years, it was the same church. It was the same songs. It was the same people. And I said, God, what's going on? It's not them. They're wonderful. Truly, they were. It was actually in Victoria Harbor, not too far from here, just outside of Midland. Wonderful people. But my heart just left. It was gone. And I didn't know what was going on. I now realize that God was preparing me for my next stage of ministry, which is to travel full time. And I had no idea what it was that I was going to do. I resigned just like that. I gave my 2 weeks notice and I left. And the board actually, they cried when I resigned. I've had board members cry when I joined, but I've never had them cry when I resign. And, you know, just to add to the quality of my marriage, I said to my wife, I have great news for you. I'm quitting. We're going to have no salary. And yay, we're going to move in with my mom and dad. Married with two kids. That was awesome. So we did that, and I had no idea of where I was going to go next. I honestly didn't. We had no income, no vision, no direction. I was dry after 11 years of ministry. I was just, I was beaten down. I didn't know where God was going to take me. And Karen's dad has a ministry to Israel, which I had no interest in at all. Zero. I couldn't care less about what was happening in Israel. I knew at one point Israel was important to God, but now it wasn't. That was my idea. So I had no connection to it. And her dad never invited me to any meetings. He never, you know, said, hey, do you want to go to Israel? He never. He let me find my own way. And so he was having this gathering in their home where they were giving out free food. And I didn't have a salary. So I went for the free food. And I got there, and there was small group, maybe 40 people. And have you ever met like an Israel person? Right? Right? This house was full of Israel people. And so I didn't know what to expect. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't have my heart with Israel, nothing. So I kind of went and I started taking food that I couldn't pronounce. I've never even heard before. You know, hummus and falafel and tahina and all this kind of stuff. But it was free, so I filled up my plate. And I went to the furthest corner of the house, and I sat in a room where nobody was. And I thought, great, nobody's going to bug me. I'm going to eat. People will see, oh, I was here to support my father-in-law. What a good son-in-law. It was a win-win situation for me. So I take my food. I go to the living room, and in walks this lady. And I didn't know it at the time, but she's what's called a Messianic Jew. Have you heard that term before? A Jewish person who believes that Jesus, Yeshua, is the Messiah. And so, yeah, I was. Who said wow? Okay, you get a free DVD. Come here. Yeah. I used to throw them out like a rock star, then I hit somebody and it cut their forehead. So, you're welcome. I was looking for a way to give that away. So, thanks. So, in walks this lady. And she's go, oh, isn't this wonderful? I'm like, Oh, isn't this just so great what God's doing in Israel? Oh, yeah, it's awesome. This was 2002. The Intifada was going on, which was the Arab uprising. And there was 5 suicide bombings a week in Jerusalem. Not a good time to go to Israel. And so she says to me, oh, wouldn't you just love to go to Israel? All right, and I'm like, do you watch the news? She goes, oh, don't you just want to go to the Holy Land to see where he walked? And she's really selling it to me. And I'm like, not really. Did he go to Cuba? I'll go to Cuba. And she's, you know, and she's just, she's talking to me. And I'm going to pick on somebody. I'm going to pick on you. That's what you get for sitting in the front row. And she starts talking to me like this. And you ever get in a conversation with somebody, you know, they kind of lock eyes like this, and they don't look away, and you don't know when it's polite to look away and how long you should look. And it's awkward, right? Just like this, right? And so she's saying, you need to go to Israel, right? And she's like, you need to go to Israel. And I thought to myself, you need to go somewhere else. I thought it. I didn't say it. And she said, would you like to go? And I thought, well, listen, it's $10,000 for my wife and I to go. I don't have a job. I don't have a salary. I can't afford to go. So I had an out. I said, well, sure. I said, if the Lord supplied, I would go. Knowing the Lord wasn't going to supply. What a man of faith you have speaking this morning. I said, who's going to give me, this high school dropout immigrant, who's going to give me 10 grand to go to the Holy Land? So I said to her, she said, you know what? If the Lord provided, I would go. And she said one word, changed the course of my life. She looked at me, she said, done. I said, pardon? 2 weeks later, I'm on a plane flying to the Holy Land. So what in the world is going on? Now, Karen's dad was already going to Israel, so I couldn't get on the same flight. I had to go via British Airways through England. He was going to Canada. And so we had to fly separately, but we would meet there. Now, I had never been there. I didn't know what to expect when I got to Israel. And as the plane was starting to get closer to Tel Aviv, which is the city where you land on the coast of Israel, I started to get really, really nervous. Because, I mean, I was watching CNN, and CNN never, you know, blows things out of proportion. They only report accurately. And so as the plane was starting to descend, I was looking for surface-to-air missiles to hit the plane, right? And I was sweating it out. I didn't know what to expect. And I was so nervous and so afraid. And then the plane starts to descend, and it goes parallel, and it goes with the shore of Israel. And I almost started to cry because the land I was seeing, I had seen in the maps in the back of my Bible. I was like, oh my goodness, I've never been here, but I know this place. Even from the air, I can see the coastline. I go to the back. Yeah, that's in here. This is that place. I mean, I started to get excited. So the plane lands. And in those days, it wasn't in the new airport that's there now, which is very, very state-of-the-art, high-end. I mean, beautiful. Back then, it was kind of like a little backwards, you know, and you would land in the middle of nowhere, and they would bring, you know, they would push the stairs to the plane. You would get off, get on a bus, and the bus would take you back to the terminal. And so the plane lands, and the doors open, and the heat just comes in and starts flooding me. I'm like, oh, I'm in the Holy Land. I'm having this amazing experience. And the two Israeli security people look at me. They look at each other. They do the head nod. And then they head towards me. And I said, I'm in trouble. Now, this was a couple trips later. When I have a goatee facial hair, I look like a certain ethnic group. That's not good when you're going to the Middle East. And so somebody said to me, you look like a suicide bomber. Right? I said, oh, that's not good. They said, no. So you need to dress it down. You need to look more like North American. So maybe put like blonde highlights in your hair. No, that's what they said to do. And so I did. I put blonde tips in my hair because I wanted to look like a North American. But what happened was suicide bombers who were wanting to blend in were dyeing their hair. So I was looking like a person who was a suicide bomber pretending not to be a suicide bomber. So the guy came up to me, he said, Shalom Boker Tov, Manishma. Aho. You don't speak Hebrew? I said, no, I don't speak Hebrew. He said, this is your first time in the country? I said, yes. He says, why'd you come today? I said, I don't understand the question. Why'd you come today? Why didn't you come yesterday? Why not come tomorrow? Today's special day, why you come today? I said, I don't know. I said, the lady who paid for my trip sent me today. Who paid for your trip? So I don't know her. You took a ticket from a stranger? Are you flying? You know, do you have a family? I said, yes, but I'm flying alone. Why are you flying alone? I said, well, no, my father-in-law's coming, but he's on a different plane. Why are you flying in separate aircraft? The Holy Land feeling, right out the door. I'm probably exaggerating. It felt like hours. I don't know how long it was. But I finally get through the interrogation. And this is before I get on the bus. And all the Israeli Jews on the bus are looking back at the guy they're interrogating, right? And they finally clear me. I get on the bus, and everybody kind of takes a step back from me. I'm like, how you doing, Gentile? How you doing? Nice to meet you. To make a very long story short, my father-in-law lands. We connect, we get in the taxi, we head up to Jerusalem to our hotel, and he's just in heaven. His son-in-law is with him in the holy city of Jerusalem. And I'm already just wanting to go home because this really rattled me. And we go to bed, and my hotel room is the bomb shelter. Right? And I'm like, great. Sure, it's the bomb shelter. And every time there was a siren, I thought they were coming for me. And I'm just having a horrible, horrible time. I'm going to sell you a tour to Israel later, but it's going to change. I'm having a horrible time. The first 4 days, every night, I went to bed crying. And Karen's back in Toronto crying. I want to come home. I want you to come home. And I'm like, who would come to this place? Who would come more than once? They're crazy. I've been there 31 times now. And on the morning of the fourth day, our tour guide showed up. That dear lady who sent me put me on a private tour. It was myself, my father-in-law, and two friends from Barry. And so, 8 o'clock in the morning, knock on the door. I go, and this kind of like this, you know, burly-looking guy with a beard. He says, hey, Boker Tov! I'm like, be there. Shalom, how are you? Hey! And he's all happy, and I'm like, yeah, I'm great. I said, what's your name? He goes, oh, my name is Achaye Bar David. I said, cool. I said, well, what does that mean in English? Oh, the lion from the tribe of Judah. I said, cool, my name's Joe. It didn't have the same oomph. And so Achaye puts us in the van. It was just like the four of us and him, and we're driving around. And he said, okay, stop, get out your Bible. This is where Matthew 16 took place, where Yeshua said this. I said, Yeshua. I'd never heard that name before. I don't know if you have, but I'd never heard it. And then we're somewhere else, and he says, oh, this is where Yeshua did this miracle. I said, Yeshua? And after about 2 hours of this, this is how ignorant I was. I thought the Jewish guy was saying Jesus' name wrong. And it was my job as a Gentile to correct him. So, Achaye, I said, I don't even know how to bring this up. I said, I'm pretty sure we're talking about the same guy. But you keep calling Jesus Yeshua. And he looked at me like I was just from another world. He said, well, that was his name. I said, no, I'm pretty sure it was Jesus. And he said to me, remember when the angel appeared to his mother, Miriam? I said, who? You mean Mother Mary, right? And he said, you know that Mary wasn't a Roman Catholic, right? Right? And I was like, what? And we started traveling the country. And the longer I was there, the more I started to see how the Jewish culture affected the Bible and affected him as a man living in that culture. Now, I'm going to give you guys your first wow if you haven't had it yet. Are you ready? What? Okay, ready? Okay. Jesus wasn't a Christian. Let that sink in for a second. What's a Christian? A follower of Christ. So was he a Christian? No, what was he? He was a Jew. And when I said that, my friend was beside me, and I said to him, I said, God has shown me something that's like huge. It's like the discovery of another universe. It's that big. It's huge. I said, what? I said, Jesus was a Jew. And when I said it, I covered my mouth. Because where I grew up, when you called somebody a Jew, it was negative. Okay, we've all heard it. And I covered my mouth and said, oh no, did I just say something bad? And it took me a while to digest what I'd said. Hang on a second, what do you mean? He wasn't a Christian, he was a Jew. Well, what did that mean living in that time, living in the first century? What did it mean to be a Jew? How did a Jew live? How did the culture affect him? And I began to study more and more about him. And the more I studied about Yeshua, see, I knew Jesus for a long time, but I didn't know Yeshua. And I wanted to know this Yeshua, this Messiah who came and gave his life for me. I wanted to understand how the Jewish culture made him who he was. Now, I know you guys are Christians, and you guys don't watch movies, right? Okay, but how many of you slipped? And you saw my big fat Greek wedding. Anybody? Wow. We're going to have an altar call after the service this morning. Open up that baptismal tank, brother. If you've seen that movie, then you know my story, okay? I represent the loud, in-your-face Portuguese family. Okay, Wasega Beach isn't far from here, right? Have you ever got to Wasega and all the picnic tables are taken? That was probably my family. Sorry about that. We travel in herds and locusts, and we consume everything in our path. And Karen came and comes from this sweet, quiet Canadian family. And when I met her, then I met her parents, and I said, you guys are freaks. They ate with these things that I saw in movies, forks and knives. Have you seen those? You know, God gave me utensils right here. Right? To take potato salad, to grab. And our cultures clashed. Every time she met one of my uncles, she thought that they were mad. Because they're always yelling. This is how they talk. They have one volume. And we were at my parents' house, and all the men were on one side of the basement around where all the food was, and they were talking loud like normal. And then one uncle was a little louder than everybody else. And he started to talk, and he stood up, and he was pointing at my one uncle in the face. And he was hitting the table real hard, and there was spit coming out of his mouth. And Karen came in and said, "What's wrong? Are they going to fight?" I said, "No, they're just talking about soccer." And they were, I kid you not. They were. They fight over which Portuguese island produces the best potatoes. I mean, and they fight. I've learned that culture is really, really important to understanding a person. If you don't know me, you'll think that I'm just a loud person. But, oh, he's Portuguese. That's just the way he is. Like when I went to China to preach, I had to learn the Chinese church is very quiet. They don't like the wows. They don't know. They're very quiet, respectful. Do your thing, get out, and go home. And so I have to respect the culture of where I go. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about culture this morning because it's going to help us to better understand Yeshua, to understand Jesus, okay? Now, real quick, let me just give you a couple things that you can do. How many of you use Facebook? Anybody? How many have checked your Facebook since the service started? Okay. If you're into Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, this isn't moving. There we go. We have a channel where you can go on to and you can just stay connected through Twitter and YouTube. We post our TV shows. Karen and I host a show called First Century Foundations. We film it on location in Israel. And if you don't have cable or you don't know when the show is airing, just go to our channels there and you can see when it is that we air. And we're on Vision TV, Miracle Channel, CTS, all that kind of stuff. We have a website, firstcenturyfoundations.com, that you can go to. And you can find out more about the ministry. I'll talk about the products a little bit later. We have a tour going to Israel in November. Like I said, I've been back 31 times, and I can't tell you how safe it is. People think that I'm lying when I say how safe it is. I've taken my mom, my wife, my children, my aunts. There's a peace, there's a surreal peace and security when you're there that you can't understand unless you're there. How many have not been to Israel? Let me see your hand. Of those who have not been to Israel, you would say, "I would love to go to Israel one day to walk where he walked." Okay? If that's you, come and see us. We have, I think, about 20 spaces left on our November tour. We're going to Italy first, to Rome. We're going to go to the Vatican to see the ceiling of Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel, to the catacombs, the second century tombs of the first Christians. We're also going to be going to the Colosseum. I mean, amazing, amazing places in Rome. And then on to Israel, to Jerusalem, to the Sea of Galilee, to all the places that you read about in the Bible. It truly, truly is a trip of a lifetime. And if that's something that's of interest to you, please come back and see us after the service, okay? So, sorry? Done. Ask the person beside you. I gave away a DVD. What more do you want? So we're talking about culture and how important it is to understand a culture of a person to know why they are the way they are. I went to Jamaica, and when I was preaching down there, they would say things I had no idea what these dear people were saying. They have all these idioms, these figures of speech that make sense in Jamaica, but to a non-Jamaican, you have no idea what they're saying. You just smile and say, "Yes, praise the Lord." No idea what's going on. Well, we have idioms. We have figures of speech that we say in this part of the world all the time. And you use them maybe on a daily basis, and you don't even think about it. Like if it was raining really, really hard, what would you say? "It's raining cats and dogs." I said this to the church in China. What? Imagine if you'd never heard of this before. And you said to them, "Oh, before I got on the plane in Toronto, it was raining cats and dogs." Could you imagine what they would think of Canada? What a place. It's magic. It's amazing. You ever been in a tough spot, in a difficult situation, and you said, "Man, I was really in a pickle the other day." Imagine, you never heard that before. And you said to somebody, "I was in a pickle." That's incredible. I got to go see this Canada place. That's incredible. I am going to preach. Don't worry. I just want to set the stage. You see how important it is to know culture. You you know, in seminary and Bible school, you're taught, look at the Greek word, look at the Hebrew word, right? Always look at the original word. Well, what if in 2,000 years from now, somebody looked up the word pickle in English? And they said, no, 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 Joe used the word pickle for a cucumber that goes through a process that becomes a pickle. So Joe became a pickle. If you use the English, 21st century English, that's what you would think. So it's not just what the word meant, but how was the word used? Right, we say don't let the cat out of the bag, right? We have all kinds of stuff. I laugh till my head falls off. I mean, what a culture. When kids misbehave, we put ants in their pants. I mean, Canadians are so violent, horrible. They have 15 minutes to kill. I mean, man, right? You got to know the culture to appreciate about, yeah, it's a big wow. And you got to know the words and how they were used, not just what they meant. Does that make sense to anybody? You see, because if you misunderstand the culture, if you misunderstand the way the words were used, then you misunderstand the outcome, the teaching. A lot of times, we who are Gentiles, any Gentiles here this morning? Okay, all the rest are Jews. Wow. Okay, if your mother is not Jewish, you're a Gentile. Okay, that's it. So we're Gentiles. As Gentiles who love God, we love this book that was written in a Jewish land. And sometimes, be honest, you come to it and you read things and you say, I don't understand that. Remember in John chapter 5? This isn't part of the message, but just to talk about how when you misunderstand culture. In John 5, there's a man who was lame, paralyzed for 37 years. Remember? And there was an angel of the Lord that would come and stir waters. First one in gets healed. Too bad for the rest of you. Come back tomorrow. That's what it says. Whoever goes in gets healed, the rest of you got to come back tomorrow. Does that sound like God? What if we had a healing service right now? I said, there's only enough healing power for one person. The rest of you come back again next month. How would you feel? Are we missing something to that story? Yeah, in fact, we are. Because we don't know the culture. Now, who would like to know what that story means? Okay, it's in page 42 of my new book, Understanding Jesus. Apparently, everything's on page 42 in my new book. No, seriously. You know, if we don't understand the culture, we miss things. And we love God and we want to know, but if we don't understand them in the culture, we miss the full meaning. I'm going to give you an example here. In the Gospel of Mark. And this is a very famous story, one that you've read it. If you're a pastor or a teacher, you've probably taught this before. The woman with the issue of blood, you can see it there. A woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all that she had. Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. Let's just pause there for a second. Now, most of us in the room cannot relate to the affliction that this woman had, okay? But we can relate to the situation. The more she tried, the worse her situation got. You ever had that in your life? You pray for somebody, and the more you pray for them, the worse their situation gets. And he said, God, what in the world is going on? That's how this woman feels. She spent all that she had. She's gone after every doctor, after everything, but instead of getting better, she gets worse. But when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. And immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she had been freed from her suffering. And Matthew puts it very, very concisely. Behold, a woman, which was diseased with an issue of blood 12 years, came up behind him and touched the what? The what? The hem of his garment. Who's wearing? Can you stand up for a second? Here, stand up on this bench and face them. Not everybody can see it. Now lift one leg. Okay, and touch your nose. No, I'm kidding. Okay. If you look at the bottom of his jeans, he has a hem. Sorry for messing that up. He has a hem at the bottom of his jeans. Anybody else, you have a hem on the bottom of your jeans. I have a hem here on the bottom of my shirt. Now, I'm a Canadian, so when I read that somebody touched the hem of his garment, I think like a Canadian. I can't help it. It's what I am. But guess what? Nobody wore pants in the first century. There was no such thing as a hem. So what was she touching? You ever thought that through? Of course not. We don't think that way. We're Canadians. We live here now. We think Jesus wore jeans and a nice shirt. No. What was he wearing that had a hem? What was a hem in the first century? Is that a valid question? If we understand what a hem was, we understand why she touched it and why she was healed. If you don't understand it, it's just a really awkward story. She just went around touching people's clothes, hoping to get healed. If you don't get the background, you don't understand why she did what she did. I need a tall male volunteer just to come up here. Come on. Away in the back. The sound guy. There you go. Okay. Nobody's tall in the first few rows? Okay. Come on up. Okay, it's a short message. Hurry up, run. Go off to the side. Okay. Now, you're not Jewish, right? Okay. We'll just stand there and look at everybody. Now, if you have smartphones or camera, this is a great Facebook profile picture. Okay? You ready? He's a Christian. Now he's Jewish. He's Christian. Now he's Jewish. Okay? Just say, Shalom. Ooh, did you feel that? Doesn't he just look more spiritual when he wears a prayer shawl? Why am I doing this? I'm putting this on him because there's a command in the Bible that said every Jewish male was to wear a prayer shawl. And on the corners of the prayer shawl, he's to put what are called tassels. Okay, let me kind of walk you through this a little bit. What is a tassel? First of all, so she came up behind him in the crowd and she touched the hem of the garment is what we have in the English. But if you go back to the original Greek there, the word kraspeden means a twisted piece of wool or a tassel. So how many people ever thought of Jesus as wearing a prayer shawl? Anybody? Okay? A handful of us. Most of us see him wearing a necklace with a cross. Right? Going to Sunday school, carrying his little New Testament under his arm. Right? No such thing. Okay, so everybody sees Jesus, as a Jewish male, would have been wearing a prayer shawl because he was Jewish and that was the law of the day. So absolutely 100% he was wearing his prayer shawl. So when she came up behind him in the crowd, she didn't touch the bottom, the hem, but she actually goes for and touches the tassel that's on the corner of the garment. Everybody understand that so far? Okay, thanks very much, bud. So she comes up behind him in the crowd, touches the tassel of his garment. Now, in Hebrew, every word has a numeric value. Let's make it really easy. My name Joe, J-O-E. J is whatever letter of the alphabet. O is whatever the letter. E is whatever level. You go to those letters and you add those numbers together of what my letters are and you get a value. Every Hebrew word has a numerical value, okay? In Hebrew, this is called a tallit, okay? And in Hebrew, the word tallit, when you add up all the letters in Hebrew, you get the number you see on the screen there, 600, okay? Everybody got that? Very easy to understand. Now, prayer shawls are made differently. We have them back there. We brought them from Jerusalem. If that's something you want, they're there. And they all look different, but they all have the same Hebrew prayer blessing on them. And they're all made the exact same way, and that they all have 5 knots and 8 pieces of string. Hey, can you guys count them for me? How many knots do we have here? 5, okay. How many pieces of string do we have? 8, right? We're good? Okay. So every prayer shawl has 5 knots and 8 strings. And when you add these together, what do you get? What's 600 plus 13? Everybody thinks it's a Jewish trick question or something. What's 600 plus 13? All right. 613. Why is that important? In the Old Testament, there are exactly 613 laws in the Old Testament. Okay? So, when a Jewish man takes his prayer shawl and he puts it on himself, he's covering himself under the law of God. Okay? He's submitting himself. He's putting the law over himself, and he's covering himself with God's word, with God's law. That's pretty cool, right? Okay, I need somebody else. So come back up for a second. And I want you just to look out at everybody. Come up a little bit higher. I want everybody to be able to see you. And I'm going to put this back on you. What I want you to notice this time is not only does the prayer shawl have tassels, but in fact, if you look at it, see how it kind of makes like a bit of a triangle shape? You see that? It's like a triangular shape slash kind of, it almost looks like a tent or a tabernacle. Do you see that? Because in the tabernacle days, not everybody could fit in the tabernacle. So this was a way of everybody having their own private tabernacle, their own private place to go and to meet with God. Stay. She's taking a picture, smile. So then prayer shawls are tents. Do you remember what one New Testament figure did for a living? He was a tent maker. You think the Jewish people were camping? It's most likely that Paul, to fund his missionary journeys, was making prayer shawls to take with him, because he would go where? To the synagogues to preach the gospel. Synagogue filled with Jewish people, it's a great market. A great way for him to earn his income. Now, when it's really time to pray, this is a small one that I use for traveling, but my personal one is so big that it envelops my whole body. I can bring my wife and my children, and it covers them totally. We're all committing together to come under the covering of God. And when it's time to pray, to go into a secret or a quiet place with God, what they do is, it's hard to do with this one, but I'll just kind of, it is. They completely envelop themselves. And in Greek, it's called the closet. Okay? In first century homes, they didn't have closets. Nobody wore pants. They didn't have to hang up anything. So when Jesus said, go into thy closet and pray, what in the world is he saying? He was saying, put on your prayer shawls. Find that quiet place with me. Cover yourself under the law of my Father, and there you will find me. Come on, is there a wow there? Thanks, brother. So far, I've been talking for 20 minutes on the word hem. Could you imagine if we put this much care and detail into every word written in the Bible? Could you imagine how much is there waiting for us to discover? Okay, so the command I told you about, that Jesus wearing a prayer shawl, comes from Numbers 15. The Lord said to Moses, speak to the Israelites and say to them, throughout the generations to come, you are to make tassels on the corners of your garments with a blue cord on each tassel. You can see this one actually here has a blue cord. Most of them don't. It's very, very expensive to do. That's because the snails that are used to get what's called tichelet, it's a shade of blue that the Bible talks about. That's the only color God accepts on prayer shawls and the garments of the priests. 2,000 years ago, the snail became extinct. So they stopped manufacturing the prayer shawls with blue. They just made them white. Everybody understood, we don't have the snails, we can't do it. Until about 20 years ago, they found the snails again, like literally 25, 30 feet off the shore of Israel. We just did a TV program where the guy who found the snails took me snorkeling. We went and took snails from the bottom of the ocean floor. We brought them back to the beach. You crush them, you put them through a process, and you get purple and blue dye. Now, how many, would you ever like to do that? Would you like to dive for snails in the Mediterranean? How many would like to do that? Would you think that would be cool? Yeah? We're actually doing that in November. We are, on our tour to Israel. It's only 3 feet deep. You're not going to drown. It's the sharks, you're not kosher, so they won't eat you, so you're fine. No, it's too warm. There's no sharks at all in the Mediterranean on that coast. And it's only 3 feet of water, and all you do is literally put your face into the water, and you see the snails on the bottom. And the guy is going to take them back to the beach, and he's going to show us how they turn these snails into the blue dye for the priestly garments, okay? So that's something that you can do. So, you're supposed to put tassels on the corner. Now, when you go to the Hebrew word for tassel, the Hebrew word there is kanaf. Now, having just read that you're supposed to put kanaf on the corner of your garment, what do you think kanaf means in Hebrew? It should mean tassels, right? You shall put, or you shall make kanaf or tassels on the corner. But it's really bizarre because this actually doesn't mean tassel in Hebrew. It means wing, as in the wing of a bird. So over time, these have become known as the wings of the garment. Okay? Now, why is that important? Does that mean anything? I'm going to take you to a psalm that you've read all the time, and it's beautiful, it's majestic. King James writes it in such a wow kind of a way, but you didn't fully understand what it means. Okay, King David, what was he before he was a king? He was a shepherd. And shepherds had two things when they traveled through the wilderness. One was his staff to direct the sheep, to defend against predators. The second was his prayer shawl, because he's a Jewish male and it's a mandatory law. He's got to carry it. So he's got a staff and he's got a prayer shawl. Now I need four tall people, male or female, to come up here. Okay, one, two, three, four. Tall or not, get up here. I'm going to have you guys stand on the platform. Okay, so you're over here, you over here, and then you stand opposite them. So the front, okay, so just hold it by the tassel there. And same thing, you guys, just hold all four corners. If you're a shepherd, and you're going through the wilderness in Judea by the Dead Sea, and in July and August, it gets to between 45 degrees and 50 degrees Celsius. It's really, really hot. And there's no caves nearby. The closest caves are in Gedi, which are kilometers and kilometers away. So you're going through the desert, and it's really, really hot, and the sheep are about to keel over because they have all that fur, all that wool. They're so warm. How do you, as a shepherd, keep your sheep cool? It was an easy way to do it. Everybody has a staff, right? So you put a staff in the ground. Each one of you put your staff in the ground. Then you take your tassels, and each of you tie the tassels to the corner of a staff, and you put it in the ground, and what do you get? Go ahead and raise it up. What do you get? You get a beautiful tent or a canopy. When the sun hits this, it creates a shadow here. So this is a shelter from the rain. It's a shelter from the storm. It's a shelter from the sun. And when you're tired, you can rest in the shadow that it creates. Everybody with me? With that, look at Psalm 91:4. Go ahead and raise it up, guys. He who dwells in the what? Do you see the connection? In the shelter of the Most High, he will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely he will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his feathers and under his what? What's the other word for wings? Under his tassels, under the prayer shawl, you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and your rampart. Anybody having a wild moment? Thanks, guys. Two more things, and I'm right up my time to close here, okay? You guys know this book? When I went to Bible school, I thought it was Italian. I thought it was Malachi. Sounds like a designer, Malachi. So, oh, they're Jews, not Italians. So Malachi chapter 4, verse 2. He writes a messianic prophecy. When we look at it now, it just makes so much sense. But in that time, I can't imagine what they must have thought. You see, he uses what's called a messianic title or a term. He uses a term called the Son of Righteousness. Sometimes the Messiah is referred to as the Rose of Sharon or the Bright Morning Star, right? Or the Root of Jesse. You have all of these terms, but they're all talking about the same person, the Messiah. So who's the Messiah? Jesus, Yeshua, right? So when there's a prophecy made about the Messiah, that prophecy is about Jesus. Now, it's easy for us in Stainer to look back 2,000 years, but at the time, they had no idea. They didn't see it coming until it came. Watch what happens. Malachi says, but for you, that's everybody in this room who revere, who fear, who follow my name, the Son of Righteousness will rise with healing in his. Let's fast forward. But for you who revere my name, the Messiah will rise with healing in his wings. And finally, but for you who revere my name, Jesus or Yeshua will rise. He will appear one day. And when he appears, there will be healing in his what? Remember the lady at the beginning of the story? She's pressing through the crowd and she said to herself, if I just touch the wings of his garment, I know I'll be healed. Why? That's what Malachi said. You see, she said, I don't care if he's Pentecostal or Mennonite or Baptist or Presbyterian or whatever. I don't care if he believes in the rapture or if he doesn't believe in the rapture. I don't care what Bible school he went to, how many Facebook followers he has. All I know, she said, is I'm suffering and I'm sick unto death. And as a little girl, she said to herself, I've been going to synagogue every week and I keep hearing that one day when this Messiah comes, the Son of Righteousness, there'll be healing in the wings of his garment. There'll be healing in his prayer shawl. So if this guy is who everybody is saying he is, I don't have to ask him. I don't have to look him up. I don't have to check up his credentials. All I have to do is come behind him and touch the wing of his garment. And if he is who he says he is, guaranteed, I will be healed. That took a lot of faith. That took a lot of courage. She's a woman. In that culture, that's not good. She's now an unclean woman. And now she touched a rabbi in public. That's execution. And when Jesus said, who touched me? All the religious people said, we're going to get ourselves an execution today. And she knew it. She said, I'm going to die anyway, so I'm going to take a chance. And she reaches out and touches. And she comes up behind him and starts to give her sob story. He says, shh. Beggars, thieves, they're the ones who have to come crawling and groveling. You're a woman of faith. Unlike everybody else here, you believe who I am. And you've shown everybody here today that I am the Messiah. Go. Your faith has made you whole. He's still saying that today. He's not saying, go up and touch Joe's prayer shawl. I think it was made in China. I mean, God can heal you if he wants. That's fine. There's a high probability that you will touch this and you will feel nothing. So he's not saying, go to Joe today. Go to the worship team today. Go to the leadership of the camp today. That's not what he's saying. He says, if you will come with faith, believing that I am who I am, that I can do what I say I can do, doesn't matter what you're going through, how bad it is, just come and touch me today, and I'll heal you. Physical, emotional, spiritual, psychological, financial, I don't know what it is that you need, but he's the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. How many here believe he is the Son of Righteousness who has healing in his wings? Let's stand together. I want to pray with you, and then I'm going to hand it back over for the team to come and close. But as we prepare to end our time together, I want to pray a prayer of blessing over you. And it's a prayer that is said in Judaism all the time. And if you'll remember when Jesus was resurrected and he was preparing to ascend into heaven, remember, he gathered his disciples one last time. And the Bible says that as he was preparing to leave them, that he lifted up his hands and he blessed them. And I never understood why he lifted up his hands. I've since learned there's only one prayer in all of Judaism that you, when you say it, you raise your hands. It's what's called the Aaronic blessing. You know the one found in Numbers chapter 6? The Lord bless you and keep you, that beautiful prayer. The last thing Jesus, the Jewish rabbi, does before he leaves earth is he lifts up his hands. So we know exactly what blessing he gave. Isn't that cool? We can know exactly what it was. And so as we're concluding together this morning, I want us all to raise our hands together. And we're just going to receive his blessing. I'm going to say it first in Hebrew, say it in English, and then let the team close. Yivarechei Adonai ve'yishmirecha. Ye'er Adonai penev v'lchai v'chunecha. Yodai Adonai penev v'lcha v'yashim l'shalom. And that means, may the Lord bless you. May he keep you. May he keep you in good health, in good standing. May he keep you in the midst of the storm. May he keep you in every situation that you're in. May the Lord make his face shine upon you. That means his favor. May you have the favor of God in your workplace, in your family, in your school, in your camp, and wherever that you, place that you go. May he be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face towards you like a father turns towards a son or daughter with pride and love. May God, our Father, turn his face towards you this morning, and may he and he alone be and give you his shalom, his peace. Pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen. Amen. How many would say they got something from the service this morning? Got something from the Lord? My wife and I are just going to be at the back book table. And if you learned something here this morning and you want to study it deeper, we have material back there. Come and see us. We'd love